Blog Talk Radio.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curve, planting the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way, the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Just a good old boy, wouldn't change if they could. Fighting the system like a two modern day Robin Hood.
Yes, sir. The good old boys got down to me from down and under, man. You know, up there in them mountains there in western the Carolinas there, North Carolina, South Carolina up there, going up towards Nashville and on towards Knoxville at Tennessee line. We got a lot of camps up there, old Donald. A lot of training camps to keep our young men ready to protect the whiteness of America. Lord have mercy. That is a nice introduction. Don, go ahead on.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Ron and Don Show. My name is Don Allen, Studio A, or Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. And Mr. Edwards, we got a power-packed jam show tonight. And I want to let people know the call-in number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. So where do you want to start out first tonight, Mr. Edwards?
Well, everybody's talking, and we in our production meeting, Mr. Allen, over the last couple of days have clearly indicated that we are going to be concentrating on the terrible tragedy in Charleston, South Carolina, at Mother Emanuel's AME Church, if you will. Let me just give a couple quick background. For some of our listening audience, our international listening audience, and certainly our domestic, and certainly our good friends down in that part of the country, and my friends up in Idaho, where they have a big training camp for Billy Bob and them up around Sand Point, Idaho, which is not far from Spokane. But Mother Emanuel AME Church, Mr. Allen, was founded in 1791. And they moved to their current location. In fact, it was burnt down in 1824 when Negroes made the mistake of talking in terms of being able to pray, you know, freely and et cetera. And Denmark Vesna, who is legendary in African-American history. Unfortunately, we don't have any African-American museum or et cetera here, so we really, you know, have to
sure
pray. But he was hung along with 34 other Negroes. The church was burnt down. It continued though in secret and et cetera. And then in 1865, after the end of the conflict, if you will, the treasonous uprising by some of the so-called Southern states of the Confederacy. It began to conduct its services in 1865 in the open. And the current location, think about this, Mr. Allen, the current location where this carnage took place, in fact, it was taking place just a week ago as we were speaking and receiving calls on this program. But it was at the current site, 1891,
wow.
100 years to the day, that the church first, quote-unquote, announced its both arrival and its incorporation and et cetera. So it's been at that location in downtown Charleston, South Carolina, since 1891. Most importantly, though, Mr. Allen, repeating again, founded in 1791. Yes, sir.
Wow. That's been here for a while.
Yeah. Reverend... Pinckney, by the way, who is now lays in state, if you will, at the state capitol in Columbia, South Carolina, became the pastor at Mother Emanuel AME Church in 2010. But as always, already a very bright star, if you will. By that time was a state senator, has been a member of the legislature, Mr. Allen, since he was 23 years old. He passed and was gunned down at the age of 41. As I repeat again, we were not aware. Unfortunately, we were not contacted, did not receive a call. I received a call at approximately 10:27 Central Standard Time from operatives who informed me, Mr. Allen, and what we did is that they were able to pipe through directly to Channel 4 in Charleston, South Carolina, and I was able to listen to the live broadcasters. There was just absolute panic in that city, Mr. Allen. People were not sure if this was a part of the final assault, if you will, though it was a very tragic assault that took the lives of nine beautiful black souls, Mr. Allen. And we will memorialize those names during the course of this program this evening. But go ahead, Mr. Allen. You had a couple of observations, maybe a couple of questions.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, you know, last night after we, not last night, but last Wednesday when we had got off the air, I turned on the TV, and not too many people are talking about this, but I heard MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, and ABC all say that they were looking for a 21-year-old gunman. This is before they showed the picture. Before they showed the picture.
Long before they showed his picture, right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, how do you know this guy is 21 years old? And so I started digging through, you know, the Internet looking for some connection, and it's well hidden. But there is a manifesto online, allegedly written by him, but I don't think he had the whereabouts to write something, you know, to almost 3,000 words, a few typos, not that many. But it was really curious that the media and the police department came out with this description, pretty accurate, of this his age is 21 years old. So if someone goes...
Mr. Allen, let me just say this on okay. behalf of our program and of course, our research staff and stringers and et cetera. That was a significant error, but let me say it like this, was probably done intentionally to alert African-American journalists like ourselves that this individual, Mr. Root, 21-year-old Caucasian from a little town just outside of Lexington, South Carolina, which is about 22 miles west / south of Columbia, South Carolina, state capital. I'm afraid, Mr. Allen, during the course of the investigation now being conducted and controlled by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the South Carolina Bureau of Investigation, and et cetera, the CIA and others, that they will want us to probably kind of stay away from that that significant blunder per se, though, as I just said minutes ago, I think that was something intentionally made available by probably an African-American who wanted us to realize that this man was known. In fact, I'm afraid, Mr. Allen, that it all depends on when he goes to trial. I'm not expecting him to go to trial for at least a year and a half, if longer. But maybe when he goes to trial, it will come out that, Mr. Allen, he had been under surveillance. In fact, he was being surveilled as he left Columbia about an hour and a half ahead of Senator Pinckney and made that two-hour drive from Columbia to Charleston, South Carolina, and positioned himself in that sacred place, in that sanctuary, sitting with at least 13 or 14, as I understand was the number that was in the Bible class, knowing that he was going to basically try to kill everybody in the room, but he was specifically waiting for the senator who had completed his chores, if you will, at the state capitol. I had a chance to listen at about 7:35 a.m. That Thursday morning to his cousin, and I'm talking in terms of Senator/Reverend Pinckney's cousin, who is also a state senator, Mr. Allen. Isn't that something? And his cousin, who is an older man, also a minister, was talking about how they had been together at a couple of committee meetings, particularly dealing with appropriations and et cetera, and then they had met in the Democratic caucus. Isn't that interesting? And then Senator Pinckney bid his goodbyes and farewell for actually the last time and made that two-hour drive because he wanted to be there in time for apparently as part of their Bible study, which, by the way, as we speak now, in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, in that church, in the very sanctuary in which this heinous crime, murder, took place, they would have a light dinner, and then they would begin the Bible study. Now, Mr. Allen, I have to indicate to you that Mr. Root knew the entire itinerary. Now, you figure it out. You've already picked up on it, as some of us have done, on Wednesday, late Wednesday night and through Thursday morning. I am like you, sir. I could not understand initially, and then it, you know, the light bulb went on when they indicated the suspect was 21 years of age, but yet they never gave his name, never showed the pictures, until it was determined that he was fleeing towards the Smoky Mountains of western North Carolina, sir. And by the way, we must say that on tonight's program, one of the real heroes, if you will, or heroines, in this entire matter was a Caucasian woman, a florist in Shelby, North Carolina, who saw him early that morning, that Thursday, 14 hours after his treachery in Charleston, and followed him at great risk to herself, called her boss at the floral shop, had him call the North Carolina State Police, indicated what highway they were on, Mr. Allen. She initially broke off after being assured that police were en route, but then she maintained that her Christian beliefs and et cetera would not allow her to do anything other than continue to follow to make sure that, if you know what I'm saying, he didn't get away. And so she was there for the arrest. And many, many in this country owe her a significant thanks and appreciation, if you will, because I think a lot of things, Mr. Allen, you and I talked about during production meetings, would have changed if he had not been apprehended and if he would have gotten into the safety of the lower Appalachia, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, Mr. Edwards, we have one out-of-state call, one local call. We're going to take the out-of-state call here right away.
Go right ahead. Yes. Caller? Yes.
You're live on the air, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Steve from Kansas City. And, I was just wondering about your theory. Do you think that there's more involved here? Because you mentioned that they had already had his age early on, but also his manifesto. Do you think that's something that could be written by somebody who went to the ninth grade? As I understand, he repeated the ninth grade.
We can call him a thug illiterate. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I read it online. It's about 2,600 words, and there's about four or five typos in it. But it's hard to say that this guy would write something like that. And I mean, I don't never met him. I don't know his level of confidence. Never even heard him speak. But it's online, and people are going to it and posting it and reading it, and with his pictures and the whole nine yards. So, I mean, there might be some underlying strange things going on with this, as my co-host Mr. Edwards had stated. But it's going to die down, and he's not going to have a trial probably for a long time, and we'll just have to wait and see what comes out in the mix.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I take, sir, and I appreciate what my colleague has indicated, but from the left, I take a little bit stronger position only for this reason. Certain information has been provided through sources that we do have at our command. Your question is an interesting one, sir, and that is if there were other conspirators involved in the assassination. Notice I use the word, sir, the assassination of Senator / Reverend Clemente Pinckney, if you will. This young man had been absolutely trained for this assassination. It had been well planned in a copyrighted story in my column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, which will come out next Wednesday. I indicate that this was a well planned, well carried out. I'm afraid that what folks are going to find out, sir, is that Mr. Root had been monitoring and conducting surveillance with the help of others on Reverend Pinckney first and foremost, both in Columbia and in Charleston, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I think that Mr. Root was being kept informed by text messages of the time that Reverend Pinckney left Columbia and the state capitol to make that 2-hour drive to Charleston. I think that he wanted to make sure, he, Mr. Root, wanted to make sure that he was absolutely positioned inside of that room in the basement of Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. I think he wanted to make sure that he had the best possible position. And what had basically happened, he was sitting next to Reverend Pinckney, according to statements and et cetera, coming out of Charleston, South Carolina, if you will. But yet he sat there for an hour with those African Americans in fellowship, if you will, discussing the Bible, discussing love, and discussing the importance of the scripture. And yet he knew that he was there to take their lives and that he was not going to commit suicide, as most mass murderers have a tendency to do, or shoot it out with the police, because he also had a rather easy, Mr. Allen and caller from Missouri, he had a pretty easy escape route and departure from Charleston. In fact, the thinking is, the information is, based on cameras and et cetera, along the freeway back to Columbia, and then north to Charlotte, and then west to the Smoky Allegheny Mountains, if you will, that he had sanctuary which had been prepared for him. And that would clearly mean, sir, that there had to be others who were awaiting him to arrive as he traveled up that area. In fact, my associate and Mr. Allen and I had a discussion. Mr. Allen was in that part of America a number of months ago, and I was pointing out to him that clearly the route that was being taken, Highway 74, from Charlotte, if you will, past, which took him, by the way, past Shelby and Forest City, if you will, and moved him up towards Hendersonville. I think that he was trying to get to a town, gentleman called Marshall, North Carolina. Marshall is at the intersection of 213, 29 and 70, just a short distance, gentlemen, from Mars Hill. And in that particular area, gentlemen, Federal Interstate Highway 26 and 40, are a number of extremists, neo-Nazi and Klan training facilities and sanctuary. And I think, gentlemen, he was going towards that. Also, caller, to your question about the manifesto, I'm aware it is now being reported that that manifesto was uncovered by the Poverty Law Center, gentlemen, in Birmingham, Alabama, about 36 hours ago. They apparently have a heck of a computer program, and, of course, my colleague, Mr. Allen, is very much an expert in that area. They have a heck of a program which is able to detect plagiarism. And so, Mr. Allen, you were close to something when you talked in terms of who probably did it. That particular manifesto came from one of the most violent right-wing extremist neo-Nazi white supremacist groups in the United States, which, by the way, their contact with Mr. Root was known to certain federal agencies. And that we are talking about, and I repeat again, sir, on this program, that Mr. Root was a subject of investigation. Information had been forwarded months before, and authorities, both federal and state, were aware that Mr. Root had been observed surveilling both the church and Senator Pinckney in his comings and goings from the state capitol to his home district back in Charleston, South Carolina. I hope that kind of answers it. Do you have any additional reflections?
Well, I just have one other, just if you might comment a little bit. It's kind of been underreported, but some of the people now running for president, particularly on the Republican side, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, Rick Santorum, have all taken money from the Council of Conservative Citizens, which is where Roof had said that he got his initial sort of understanding of racial awareness. And, of course, it's a white supremacist website, and I guess it's sort of like the old white citizens' councils.
You're absolutely correct, sir. Yeah. They are the forerunner. And by the way, gentlemen, did you know that this organization that the caller is referring pays no taxes?
Yeah,
they pay no taxes. People maintain that they've been trying over the years to get the Internal Revenue Service to deal with them, because there are some laws, gentlemen, on the books which talk in terms of violating your status, if you will, 501c3, 4, whatever. But the conservative group has very powerful friends at court, gentlemen, both in Washington, D.C. and in Columbia, the state capital of South Carolina. That is where I'm coming from with regards to the fact that the word is now out that they knew, because there had been intercepts, Mr. Allen, caller, that the NSA, the NSA had uncovered calls. Codes were being used, if you will, and et cetera. But you know, these guys are well trained to know how to break them, if you will. And so that's why I'm so saddened, but had waited to use our program tonight with my associate, Mr. Allen, to indicate that, yes, there are others involved, if you will. Maybe not his father, Bennett Root, if you will, or his mother. The father, you know, gentlemen, backed up off the fact that he gave him money to purchase that brand new Glock. I think, if I'm not mistaken, gentlemen, that's a 16-shot handgun, 15 in the clip, one in the chamber. By the way, he carried at least, gentlemen, he carried at least 5 clips into that church. He reloaded at least 5 times. And so it was his plan and preparation to harm and kill every soul in there, and then he was directed to at least leave at least one to two individuals alive and make the statement that he made. That was a statement, gentlemen, for effect, when he said, I'm going to allow you to live because I want you to tell the world on what has happened here. That is a rather interesting statement, as my colleague Mr. Allen pointed out, and you caller, for a person who had to do the ninth grade twice, if you will. Those were very flowing kind of words. Those are the kind of words that are provided to an individual as he, in the tradition of the Manchurian candidate, is being psychologically prepared to carry out his act of assassination and terror. And he did that.
Yeah.
And the calculation was immediate racial conflict and assessment. Gentlemen, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this out of Missouri. I just think we cannot begin to show our appreciation and praise to the thinking and leadership of the African-American community and then, you know, white supporters who joined them, realizing that the African-American community had not taken the bait because the plan called for a reaction by the African-American population, and then that would bring a counter-response. And I think that's one of the reasons that even the governor, who had some problems initially getting her mind around the fact that there was no rioting or violence on the part of African-Americans in South Carolina or other places, because the individuals who, you know, helped coordinate this effort had truly, truly anticipated a African-American response, a violent response, particularly, gentlemen, after the murder, outright murder, by a North Charleston police officer, white police officer, Walter Scott. And it just didn't work. But, you know, Carla, I hope that you appreciate what we're saying here on this on this public affairs blog radio program. This young man was on the verge of getting away. And I repeat the names of two of the towns that he was heading for, if you will, Marshall, North Carolina, if you will, and Mars Hill, spelled like the planet Mars, right there along Federal Highway 26. I maintain, gentlemen, that if he would have been able to get safely into that area, he still wouldn't be found.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Can I ask you, sir, what is the discussion that's going on in your area, in your enclave? I mean, you've had a lot of problems in Missouri over the last year. Well, there have been problems there because Missouri was a slave state. So, I'm a native Missourian, so I have a pretty good feel for what people think about, particularly down in the boot country. That's around Cape Girardeau and down through there, Mr. Allen, and then back towards the Ozarks, back towards Bronson and Springfield and Joplin and et cetera, where you get up in those hills and people still tell you about how they used to kill Negroes and ran Negroes out of that part of Missouri. But, sir, what is the flavor of discussion there in Missouri?
Well, I think generally the flavor is sort of a reluctance to actually call it a racist terrorist attack. They want to call him mainly that he was crazy and, you know, just this crazy kid on drugs who was doing this, and they don't want to. I think racism is still something that's difficult for some people here in Missouri to talk about. They don't really, they want to, like, just pretend that it's all behind us, so. They just want to call it just a, this, and they want to sort of put it in with like the Newtown incident and then Columbine and all that kind of stuff.
Sandy Hook and et cetera, all carried out by Caucasian gunmen. All right.
All that. So.
All right, sir. Any questions, Julian, Mr. Alvin?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. I want to thank you. You have anything else? Any other questions of us?
No, that's all. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. All right.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Allen, if we have additional callers that we don't want to keep anybody, that was an interesting exchange with the caller from down in Missouri. Do we have any other callers waiting? Let's get them in.
Not at this time. The young man, he just died. I was talking to the engineer. He said he'll call right back. His battery was dying.
Okay. You had pointed out, Mr. Allen, the manifesto. I think there's some hard explaining that has to go on right now as it pertains to the organization that was just identified and that is being talked about on the media. And as the caller said, a number of Republican presidential contenders have returned the money that was being put into their campaign.
Yeah, but, except for Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, is Michelle running for president again?
No, she received donations a while back when her campaign. There was no comment.
Oh, so she didn't know. Yeah, you're somewhat distanced from your mic there, Mr. Allen. But anyways, Michelle Bachmann, former congresswoman out of the 6th congressional district here in Minnesota. Interesting creature, if you will. Mr. Allen, have you heard much discussion here in the Twin Cities? I haven't seen anything from the NAACP, the Urban League, the Black Leadership Forum, and et cetera, which are, you know, considered to be the prime stock of black expression here in the state of Minnesota. Have they issued any statement? I mean, I know we're talking about here in Minnesota now about changing the name of Lake Calhoun, which is a big watering hole on the south side of southwestern side of Minneapolis. I guess that's the only thing we should be worried about here. Is that what I should take from that?
Yeah, I think that's all we're getting is like changing the different names of these lakes that were allegedly named after someone from down south or Confederate type that moved to Minnesota.
Well, let me just, so our international audience has clarified, the Calhoun, which is a big lake here in Minneapolis, was named after John C. Calhoun, former vice president of the United States, a son of South Carolina, if you will, but a man who has a place in history here in Minnesota because he at one time in the early 1840s was Secretary of War. That's what we used to call it. We now call it Secretary of Defense. It was called Secretary of War. And he brought, as was pointed out in the historical notes in the Congressional Library, he brought a semblance of order to the territory known as the Minnesota Territory, later to become a state, when he created Fort Snelling.
Yes.
Which also has a place in history because that was the place where Dred Scott filed his lawsuit to stop his master from carrying him back into slave territory. And I assume all historians and et cetera know about that. But John C. Calhoun was the Secretary of War and led the troops. Actually, I mean, you know, modern day Daniel Boone led the troops into this area of Minnesota, Dakota Territories. And so in 1880-something, Mr. Allen, the then Minneapolis Park Board named this big lake, which had a Native American name. I think you have it there. And I see you waving to me from the studio. And called it John C. Calhoun. And then they just cut it to Calhoun. So that's who this person was, but you know, only problem is if you start doing that, then you know the conservatives are going to start talking about it, like in our town here, taking down Martin Luther King, the first African American city councilman in Minneapolis, the legendary and beloved Van White, Harry Davis, who was well known in this community, senior, not junior. So this can be kind of a two-way pariah, right?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely can, because, you know, the street in front of the state capitol was named Constitution Avenue, and then they changed it to MLK Boulevard, Martin Luther King Boulevard, in 2002. And so what could happen with that could go back to Constitution any time. But, you know, you were talking about the real name of Lake Calhoun. I'd like to thank Shannon Nordby for sending me this information. The lake was named by the people who resided on the land. It was their own land, Native Americans, until it was stolen by the U.S. government. It's pronounced Beta Maka Seca. And I might be just messing that up, but that was the true name of the lake. And it was during the exile of the U.S. Dakota War of 1862.
Oh, that's when they hung, what was it, over 70 or more Native Americans in Mankato,
yes, yes.
The city of Mankato, which is south of the Twin Cities, as a part of what they refer to as the Great Sioux Uprising. Is that what you're making reference to?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, getting back to your point, Mr. Edwards, you know, I'm a little bit shocked that we haven't had I'm a little bit aloof, I guess, because you would expect, you know, the NAACP of both Minneapolis and St. Paul, the Urban League, and these other African-American agencies here in this town to make a statement, to get on the phone, call the local newspaper and say, hey, this is how I feel about this. You know, and get something published or do a press conference. But, you know, we don't see press. You know, people get shot up all week at Twin Cities. We don't see one press conference.
Oh, we just had a little baby, a year-and-a-half-old baby, and her mother shot on one of our prime streets just last week, right? And I don't remember anybody. Did Black Lives say anything about Black Lives Matter or what? I should leave that alone.
Yeah. And so you're looking at that, and, you know, I don't know what the deal is with these folks, but if Black Lives Matter, then someone should have said something other than commenting on, you know, the Lake Calhoun issue, which to me, Mr. Edwards, is a big misdirect for everybody. You know, if you look over here, you know, while they snatch something else. And so,
yes, sir, you are absolutely correct, sir. We're just journalists / commentators. I mean, these are so-called, you know, I mean, leadership. But, you know, I was looking at USA Today, weekend edition, just the picture there, Hate in America. And they just basically dedicated their entire front page and next 2.5 pages, the alleged gunman, but they talked about which we talked about with the caller that we had, the lone wolf theory and doctrine. Police nab suspect 245 miles away, if you will. 9 lives lost, if you will. And so I just kept expecting for the last 7 days, because this is the 7th day of that carnage, that massacre in the sanctuary of a holy church, a church over 200 years, 2 centuries old, and et cetera. And so, but, you know, we want to do this also. We want to remember, and we will just go by their last names, Ms. Coleman Singleton, if you will, Mr. Sanders, the youngest member, by the way, at age 26, Ms. Lance, if you will, Daniel Simmons, Mr. Daniel Simmons Sr., 74-year-old African-American and American, Ms. Hurd, if you will, Mr. Allen, Ms. Thompson, if you will, and Ms. Middleton, doctor, a 49-year-old retired government employee. And, of course, Senator Pinckney. But most tragically, and in some respects the least information in many respects, was Ms. Susie Jackson, 87 years old. Can't you envision Mr. Allen, Mr. Root, sitting in that room, looking at that 87-year-old African-American woman who had lived so many good and precious years, and couldn't you just see in his evil mind flaunting, quote-unquote, the doctrine of Satan, contemplating how he was going to blow her brains out?
It was reported there was another black woman and her 5-year-old granddaughter survived the shooting by playing dead. So, So
one of the women that played dead was actually was her son. This was Mrs. Sanders. That was her son, who was a hero. And to the survivors that were still in that room, he threw himself in front of his mother and attempted to negotiate with this murderer, with this terrorist, really a terrorist, if you
mm-hmm.
will.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Root shot him cold dead. The mother, Miss Sanders, did the right thing. She played dead, but she laid in her son's own blood as he his life expired from his body. I just can't get I can't get with it that Mr. Root was as the judge in the proceedings had the nerve to say that his family was a victim also. Can you explain to me what kind of victim his family was, Mr. Rittenbaum?
Yeah, I've read that comment, and I've read some stuff about that judge being disciplined for using the N-word.
In 2005,
yes. And I'm like, why is he even, but then again, that's down south. That's a whole different animal.
Well, in fairness, and so that they know that we've done our homework here, on this blog radio program. He is the chief magistrate of the county court in Charleston County, and which, of course, Charleston, South Carolina, is the county seat. So it was interesting that he took immediate control of everything and assigned himself to handle the proceedings as Mr. Root was flown back from Shelby, North Carolina, to be arraigned. And so I thought it was interesting on how the judge did. I was stunned, Mr. Allen. I watched the entire proceedings, the closed circuit and et cetera. I was kind of shocked when, and he was kind of admonishing us, as Americans and as black folk, particularly as an old plantation master. He kind of looked like old plantation master, if you will. Face got kind of red and everything, and he just said, I want you to remember that we have respect and decency, and remember that this man, this man's family, are also victims.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I guess I'm just not smart enough to grasp that, it's just, but I tell you what I am smart enough to know is that those family members, the loved ones of the victims, they know their city, don't they, Mr. Allen? Because they knew just what it was that they needed to do to bring together the circle of fellowship and humanity. And they did it by being magnanimous. They were magnanimous in saying that we pray for you, young man. I just don't know, Mr. Allen, if I could have done that.
Yeah.
I really don't. I just want to be fair and honest. I just don't know if I could have done that, but at the same time, I would have respected the wishes of the majority and probably would not have said anything. But in good consciousness, man, that really takes a lot based on what that young assassin did. I mean, look at his face. You have it there in your studio. I mean, he looked like a little baby assassin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Think about him sitting there. We just don't talk about that enough, of him sitting there with those people, knowing that he was going to kill as many as he possibly could. That's cold,
yes.
Brother. That's cold.
Yeah,
phone
is.
Number, man. Get a phone number. Line's open. I mean, we get our first call from way out of the Midwest. I'm interested to know what our people are thinking here in the Twin Cities,
Sure, yeah.
And what they're thinking about changing the name of Lake Calhoun. I mean, purpose will that serve?
Yeah, exactly. And that number is 347-426-3904. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. And the phone lines are open. Yeah, Mr. Edwards, a lot of people, don't have the guts or the confidence to pick up a phone and have this conversation, because this is a serious conversation. People are not really talking about the root cause, the racism, the continued hate. They want to talk about getting rid of a flag, changing the name of a lake, and things that are misdirect from the main issues that we need to address here, especially in our state, and we have issues of the Minnesota Department of Administration, hasn't had a really internal investigation for 16 years and who have fell out of compliance based on their various reports. Not that you or I did, but reports that have, organizations have done that, you know, state that, and still no one is paying attention to that, you know. And so, I mean, there's many problems, many challenges that need to be addressed. That it's kind of, you know, we're doing flat.
You're absolutely yeah. right. Let me just say on this, this is more for the local scene here, because it's the park board that has to try to make some kind of determination about, you know, extricating the name Calhoun Lake. But do you know that the Minneapolis Park Board has reneged on jobs for young people for the summer in our parks after sending out letters of notification that you are going to go to work on this specific date? And then 4 days later, sent out a little postcard saying that that there wasn't enough money, which only $200,000, to put these youngsters to work for 2 months. And I understand that State Representative Dietzick has raised total hell, and I praise her. I knew her father well, worked closely with him during his many years on the Minneapolis City Council, and then he was a member of the Park Board, and I think she is certainly on the advisory committee. But they said it wasn't enough money to employ these children of poor families and et cetera. So just wanted to throw that in. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
So people kind of get a feel in that, you know, our leaders are oftentimes telling us how great things are, how good things are, and why on a program like this do we complain and make noise and stir things up, if you will. But I never knew that the truth stirred anything up but the truth.
Oh, yeah. The truth is bothersome. It never changes. Excuse me. People don't like that.
They certainly don't. By the way, just on that note, moving around, because it's clear that the South Carolina thing is a little bit maybe tough for our audience and et cetera, for whatever reason. Though, like I said, dang, we get the first call we get, very intense and probing call of us from Missouri. But want to indicate kudos to Chief Janae Harto, chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, who is also a woman of color, a Native American, if you will, first female chief in the history of this city. Her appointment yesterday of Chris Arneson as assistant chief of the department, succeeding Assistant Chief Clark, who goes over to head up the University of Minnesota's independent police department. But Chris Arneson, 30-year veteran of the department, well-respected and et cetera, is appointed. And it appears that we're probably, Minneapolis, are probably the only large city in the United States with two women in the top two positions in the police department. Isn't that amazing?
That is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. And that was Chief Janae Harto, if you will, and so one has to give kudos to her. And I have to say, I've known now Assistant Chief Arneson for 30 years that she's been on the department. She is a woman of significant principle, if you will, and has certainly been in the corner for a lot of African-American officers and has worked very hard to try to increase the diversity. That's a good word, isn't it, Don? The diversity of the Minneapolis.
Yeah, the D word.
That's what it is. But so I just wanted to indicate a shout-out, if you would, to Chief Janae Harto and to now Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, if you will, and those two women are they're on the point, if you will. So,
service, we have a call.
Oh, let's get the call.
Okay, caller, you're live on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
How y'all doing tonight? This is Jamar calling from Minneapolis. How y'all to doing?
Hey, Mr. Nelson.
Oh, Brother Nelson, how you doing,
brother? I'm doing good, but I'm a little troubled. I can't lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went to sleep early last night, so I woke up this morning to see our president of the Minneapolis chapter give an interview to WCCO. About not the uprising of murders and shootings that are happening in our community, not about the incident that happened out in South Carolina. No, mm-hmm. she took to the mic and decided to chastise white folks for the proposed renaming of a Lake Calhoun because it was named after a racist white man. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little confused. She took exception to that, or she took exception to folks wanting to change the name?
She
from
took
Calhoun
exception
to whatever.
It being named after Mr. Calhoun.
You know what she should have done on that one? She should have taken that up with the park board of that particular era in 1885. Oh, that's right. None of us were alive then, including her.
No, because
they did that in 1885, and boy, that lake and that name has been around for a long time.
Right.
Now, you know, she's been here since 2003, Mr. Allen, as I understand her website indicates. Didn't that catch her attention when she first got here?
No. No.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Nelson.
Okay.
And both Mr. Nelson and Mr. Edwards, you know, black people can't do time travel. You know, she go back there.
Exactly.
She locked up. Some time lapse.
And it's crazy because this lady is smoke and mirrors, and no one is really realizing this. This is the same lady that a couple of weeks ago at the school board meeting wanted to do away with the police liaisons. Now, let's be real, as rambunctious, I'll put it lightly, as some of our children can be, you need police liaison. And listen, they were there when I was in high school. And you know what? Sometimes, which in my case, that police liaison is your friend in the streets and you run into him, which me and my friends were being silly, riding around, smoking weed. And when we got caught, his buddy wanted to rough us up. Another black man, but he wanted to rough us up. And when the officer recognized who I was, told his buddy to chill, he cut us loose.
All right.
So I think that her priorities are so messed up. You know, our community is yearning for leadership. And here's a lady that was supposedly supposed to be the next second coming of our leader. And the lady now is doing nothing, presenting nothing but smoke and mirrors. I mean, she's wasting our time. We have critical issues facing our community, and this lady wants to take to the mic and be mad about a 100-year-old lake named after a racist white dude that, sweetheart, they ain't going to change.
Let me do another 130 years.
You reckon that you won't change it now because you the NAACP president. It is so ridiculous, and I don't know why other folks aren't upset that, lady, you are wasting our time. We are dealing with serious financial and all type of issues facing our community. And I have not heard this lady once speak when she had an interview with NPR, didn't speak of the violence going on in our neighborhoods. Why not, ma'am? Or where are you at when these incidents are facing? How come you're not in these communities? Haven't seen her around. This lady is smoke and mirrors. And our community needs to wake up and realize that this lady is about self. She's not about us. You know, because I asked today on my Facebook post, I want to know, Madam President, which Black Lives Matter to you? I think it's only a few of them that matters to her. And
hey,
no one's calling this lady out.
Mr. Nelson, on that whole thought, Mr. Edwards, stand by. I got a call.
All right, let's get the call.
A call, you're live on the air. Who's you calling? What's your name? Where you calling from?
Well, I'm Miss Anonymous, and I'm glad that you got me in. Yes, well, I'm glad you got me in with Mr. Nelson, you know, because I'm kind of concerned. Why are you constantly picking on the president of the NAACP, a black woman? We have made history in this state. When it comes to Black Lives Matter and some of the issues and stuff, you are a member of the NAACP. If you have any concerns, attend the meeting and bring forth your concerns. Why use Blog Talk Radio to voice your opinion? Everybody won't agree with you. I just want you to know that. We need to focus on what's going on with our churches because the light is shining on our black churches. If you are a Christian, behave Christian-like. That's what we need our elders to start doing. Behave like Christians. We need our elders to start teaching our youth that's coming up.
Okay, you're going to give me a chance to respond? Can I respond?
Yes,
now, number one is,
Make sure you ask the young lady to stay with us now because you're getting ready to respond because I do have a question also.
Please.
And that is some of the things that she indicated that Black Lives have already done in Minnesota. But go ahead, Mr. Nelson, and then maybe
number
my question
one is, she has my email works just fine. I haven't heard of a meeting. There hasn't been a meeting called. I know other members. They, too, have not been notified of a meeting as of yet. Don, have you heard of a meeting yet since you've been elected president for the
I have friends that called me and told me that there was a meeting, and I got a text message from the secretary, but, you know, Facebook just doesn't work for me for NAACP meetings. I need to see it in my inbox, but go ahead.
And secondly, it's amazing how y'all want to talk about picking on a woman. When McAfee was president, y'all found it just fine to insult him and to insult his job as president.
Oh,
but now that it's a lady, can I finish, please? Now that it's a lady at the helm.
That was Mr. Allen. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now that it's a lady at the helm, we're attacking a woman. Well, let me help you. She's in a position of criticism, and if she can't take it, and if her skin isn't thick enough, then she needs another job. What she is doing is hurting our community, and it's too bad that you don't realize that. All the incidents that's facing our community, she gets on TV to talk about Lil Calhoun, which do you think her voice will even matter to the folks on the board of changing the name? Absolutely not. She is being laughed at.
A new hashtag, her voice don't matter. Go ahead.
Her voice don't matter. So I can't stand the fact that y'all are talking about she's a woman and we're attacking her.
Well, now let the young lady, she wants to respond. Young lady wants to respond, and let's hear her response, Mr. Nelson, to you. I still have a specific question for her if she stays with us. But young lady, feel free to respond.
Well, you know, I wanted to say that although we are talking about Lake Calhoun and all that, you know, I'm not really a fan of Black Lives Matter. So when you say y'all, you know, I don't know who you're talking to because you're not talking about me. But when we talk about our black president, you know, I support him. You know, I support him. Even today, I support him. If you are aware of the times and what we're dealing with now.
I'm sorry. I'm a little confused.
Me too.
Talking about the president of the NAACP, who's a female, and now how did we get into? Because no one has said anything against President Barack Obama, so I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, actually, I'm just responding to what he said. He said y'all, and he mentioned the black president of the United States.
No,
Nelson.
I don't think you said it, but go ahead, Mr. Nelson.
Oh yeah.
There's a missing link in communication. Then, if I'm wrong, then let me know that. But that's what I heard. And what I want to say, as far as Zaya Theis, you know, we have to be aware of the time. Now is the time for us to get rid of these Jim Crow symbols that is oppressing our people. So what's wrong with her talking about Lake Calhoun being removed? Now is the time to talk about removing them symbols. Are you going to stand beside her and help her, or are we going to be as a kid like we have always been?
Mr. Evans, I'll let you respond, but
no, I'm not. I don't need to respond. I just wanted to hear his response. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead. This is the excellent conversation.
Yeah,
it's kind of conversation we need. Go ahead.
Here's what I want to say about that, Mr. Anonymous. I know who you are, but I'm not going to tell you. But in the very beginning of the NAACP stuff, I contacted Dr. Pounds, and I said, "Hey, it would really be great if you run for the NAACP president." She was the only one that I could think of in this city that would do the right thing, that would bring some folks together. Because, you know, when the women come, the men come, and everybody kind of gets the cohesiveness, and you have effective followers, you have people that want to get the task and the job done and that group communication. And then I said, you know, I want to be on your slate. Well, she called me back and said, well, I don't know. I'm just going to be neutral. I'm not going to have you on my slate. I'm not going to have you nobody running against you. Okay, fine. That's wonderful. But after the election, okay, you don't tell me that Black Lives Matter, and you have some little punk from Black Lives Matter texting me on Twitter calling me a house Negro. Okay? you tell that punk son of a bitch that he can kiss my ass, and so can they. Okay? Because if you're going to marginalize, any black person and black life, they kicked Mr. Edwards out of an NAACP meeting. with police. If Black Lives Matter, that wouldn't have happened. If Dr. Pounds wanted to be a peacekeeper, she could have squashed all that by walking to the stage and said, hey, we've had too much of this back and forth, this backbiting, this craziness. It ends today. We're going to work in unity. Okay, but no, it's a position with, looks at the definition in the Urban Dictionary of poverty pimp and then look in the newspaper. That's all I ask.
And she don't fall under that category. I'm going to tell you
Miss
that.
Miss Anonymous, let me say this. I will stand with Natima and anybody in my community when it comes to the right particular issue, okay? Absolutely. But I will not stand with Ms. Pounds when she's making – we have critical issues facing our community right now. Someone, especially a lady in that type of position, should be shining light on solutions, on the issues, bringing people together. Wait a minute, Ms. Anonymous. This is the same lady that decided to call out Bobby Joe, decided to call out Jeff. Now, this is a law professor. She should believe in due process, yet she don't believe in due process for our own people, though.
Let the young lady speak. What did you say, madam? We couldn't catch everything you were saying. You said what now?
I said, you know, I'm real big on accountability. So when it comes to calling anyone out, I don't care what color they are, I'm going to call them out as well. And even if that means calling out our elected officials, when it comes to what we're dealing with in our community, we need to be calling somebody out.
No.
Okay.
I don't have a problem with that. But how about having due process first? First of all, you are ticking off the very constituents that you're supposed to represent. Bobby Joe and Jeff have a lot of constituents on the north side. You are ticking off their constituents by insulting these brothers. How about bring these brothers to the table, still seek their advice, their ideals on different solutions. She doesn't want to do that. These brothers haven't been convicted of any crimes, okay? No matter what they've been accused of, they haven't been convicted of any crimes. So we still need to bridge gaps in our community instead of continuously be divisive, and that's what this lady is. Again, you take to the mic to bring Lake Calhoun instead of taking up the issues. How about the 15-month-old child that's in the hospital right now with the permanent bowel and intestine problem for the drive-by shooter? Doesn't say anything about that, or the brother that did it wants to talk about Lake Calhoun. Now, come on now.
Okay,
it don't take all day
to
recognize sunshine.
Can I get both of you to stand by, Mr. Anonymous?
If we knew better, we would do better.
Thank you for calling. We appreciate it, and we hope you continue to listen to
show. I have one question for Ms. Anonymous. Because I said I wanted to kind of get a feel for some of the things that, but then she kind of changed the tad when she talked about she didn't necessarily adhere to everything that Black Lives Matter. Have you had a chance, young lady, to read the letter that was sent by the president of the NAACP, before she was president, and some of her associates who later became officers, to the governor indicating that there should not be any funding for the African-American community, but there should be funding for her group? Or have you ever had a chance to see that letter?
Have you ever had a chance to see the video when they were in front of the church, when the women were being called?
Oh, definitely. Yes, I know all about that. Yes, that was Natanya Johnson, Helen Williams, and in fact, they even brought a photographer, as I understand it, outside the church. You're talking about when the profanity came down and et cetera. Oh, yes, I know all about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we know about that.
Yeah, we certainly know about that.
Mr. Edwards asked you a question, Ms. Anonymous. Can you answer Mr. Edwards' question?
Yeah, I asked you a question about the letter. Did you know about? Have you ever read the letter? Did you know about the letter to the governor?
Well, I'm in the middle of answering that question, and the reason why I asked about the
video. Oh, you asked me about the video. Had I seen the video? And I said, yeah. So can we get to my question? Have you read the letter? And if you have read the letter, then what was your feeling about it?
Well, my feeling is, accountability. And we want to know where the money went before we start putting more money.
No, I'm talking about the money. Well, yeah, we already know about that. But I'm talking about the money that she asked the governor for.
Well, I don't have any problem with that, the money she asked for. But when it comes
you're not listening to what the question was, Ms. Anonymous.
Right, that's okay.
But no, it's
that's
not,
right. Ms.
Edwards.
You call on here
to try to jump down my throat, and you're not even listening, Ms. Anonymous. The man asked you a question. How do you feel about this lady before she was elected president writing the governor, telling her not to give certain African Americans money in the community? Not the Jeff Haydens, not the Bobby Doe Champions, but other folks in the community that needed money allocated to them. How do you feel about that?
A lot of those people who asked for that money were poverty pimps. So I do agree with
Lord.
Our sister.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Okay. And that's, you know, that's one of the beauties of a democracy. First Amendment, freedom of speech. We look forward to having you call back in again. You keep the adrenaline running. And thank you, Anonymous.
And stand by. We have another caller.
And by the way, we're going to 10, Mr. Allen. You've already made the proper connections.
Yes, okay. Yes, I have.
Got a caller. Let the caller in. I think we've finally,
hello?
You know, drawn them out.
Yes, caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, you're live, sir.
Oh, am I on the air? Hi. This is Marvin.
Yeah, Marvin. Exactly. What's going on?
Hey, really, really good conversation. I just kind of want to chime in because I got feelings on both sides. With Miss Anonymous, I certainly understand the position they're taking and what she was trying to convey. But I do want to remind the listeners here that, you know, just like I know Ron and I think you, Don, you know, we're all native Minnesotans. And
yeah.
You know, we can't talk about the disarray of our community without, at some point, holding ourselves responsible. We were the men at the helm when all this craziness started to blossom and grow and fester in our community to the point now to where it's so large, hardly anybody can really wrap their hands around the issues and how it is that they're going to be addressed so that we can get a vibrant, healthy, spiritual community again. You know what I mean? And so
absolutely, sir. I think,
you know, because I certainly own mine. I certainly own mine. But I think we all have to take a step back and say, you know, we were asleep at the wheel when this stuff, because, you know, 50s and 60s, it wasn't like that, Ron. I was raised under you. And
yeah, I
had
I
leadership
like
under
this,
you.
Right.
I had leadership under Spike. I had leadership under the men at the way. I had leadership under Bonnie and Cozy and them, and the women at the old Wheatley. You know, they laid the groundwork for us, and over time, it was like a football that we fumbled. So I'm saying that on some level, we all, you know, who are native here and who are 50 and older need to bear some brunt of that responsibility. Thing I like to say is that it's my opinion that we offer way too much criticism without enough solutions. Now, you know, Brother Nelson speaks, you know, I think very, very, very badly about Mrs. Palm, but she is a powerful woman. You know what I mean? And with that power, we could either use it as an ally against changing this community, or we can continue to pounce on her and to attack her, and then she's going to get into survival mode. And like everybody in this community, we all have power. But if we don't figure out how it is that we are going to join forces collectively with the utilization of everybody's power, you know, we're going to fight for another 20 years. And guess what? Me, you, and Ron, we're going to move on to, we're going to go home one day, and we would have left nothing for the young leadership. The last thing I like to say is this. I've been to a number of Black Lives Matter rallies. They are simply the highlight of any event that I can participate in. It's vibrant,
okay,
it's energetic.
What do they want? Can you tell me what they want?
No, nobody can.
No, wait, okay. That's a good question.
Can you tell me what they want?
Well, let Mr. Smith answer. Mr. Bogart Smith answer. What is it that you feel that they want? And is what they want part of the tradition that you grew up under?
Absolutely. I think that it is a recreation of that village that you, I, and Don grew up in. I think they are really seeking to reestablish that village because that village has been lost. We know that if we don't recreate that village, we're going to lose these young souls over and over again. We see it every summer. The second thing is, men, these guys are less than a year old. They are not an old group. They are a young group. Mm-hmm. Instead of demanding unreasonable things from them, why don't, Ron, you got the most information of any black man in this state historically. There is nobody that can put together names, events, initiatives, collaborations, things together like you. You are our archives for the history of Minnesota, Hennepin County especially. My feeling is that this is a young group, and at some point I hope, men, that instead of putting the pressure on these kids to do this or do that, that we simply embrace them and give them some leadership, some knowledge, and do what it is that us elders are expected to do with the young leadership coming up. And with that, I'll close.
All right.
Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you, sir. All right.
We have another caller.
Let's do this, Don, because we want to thank Mr. Nelson, because we don't want to get cross references and cross back and forth. So, Ms. Brother Nelson, we want to thank you for calling
sir.
In and your observations. Okay.
Thank
you, sir. Go ahead, caller. Pull him in, Don. This is great.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please. What's your name? Where are you calling from? Oh, caller. 1986. Okay, I don't guess they
1986. That's interesting. Well, at least it isn't 1488, which is the call letters of the Ku Klux Klan of America, buddy. That's a dangerous number. 1488. But that, anyways, the lines are still open, though. We're looking for the calls, reflections of how we can get things moving. Go ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Okay, they want to be in the queue. We'll leave in the queue. And we have this caller. Caller, you're live on air. Go ahead.
Not sure if I'm on. This is Mr. M.
That's you.
Mr. M, good to hear your voice, sir. You're on, and we're down to the – oh, we got plenty of time because last week you called in. You only had about 3 minutes. I didn't like to do that.
This,
so we have about 17
program,
minutes. Go ahead, sir, your observation.
Well, this program has been riveting. I mean, it really has. I mean – you know, I really love the fact that we're starting to have some dialogue. You know, we're going to have – people are going to see these things differently. They're going to bring different things to the people, Mr. Nelson, the young lady. So I think that was a very spirited conversation, and I think the dialogue is what becomes the beginning of what's necessary to put these things on the table so that we can sort these things out.
Yes, sir. My co-host, Mr. Allen – fully concurs also. We've been waiting for this for a long time, but go right ahead.
And what seems to really be missing, you know, they talk about, you know, the Urban League, the leadership, and things just seem to be in such turmoil. But, you know, what I really focus in on is that real leaders lead, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They figure out how to do it. You know, that's why they're in the position, because we all don't know as a group. But real leaders, the Martin Luther Kings, the organizers, they know how to lead. You know, it kind of almost leads me back to, you know, we've been seeing a lot of things in the news about Hennepin County Child Protection.
Yes, sir. Sure have.
And their, you know, abject failures and, you know, appears in taking care of kids. But, you know, having been in that type of line of work myself for a long time, see, that's a very difficult job.
Yes, sir.
And in some ways, it's almost like saying, well, I want to blame the highway patrol because there was an accident on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stop that. Okay?
Absolutely.
They can't stop that.
Unless they become the thought police. Yeah, you know, you're right. But let me pose something for our listening audience, because I'm aware that you are very knowledgeable about...
Can't really do their job.
How the county and et cetera works. I'm very concerned that three of the last four babies, young children and et cetera, that have perished were African American and one very tragically beaten to death by a white boyfriend of the white mother was of course a young Caucasian. But that's four babies too much. Now, the Child Protection Unit is kind of crying about the fact that they're allegedly undermanned, underfunded, and et cetera. Is that correct, or are we in a situation where people are not caring as much as we would like them?
Well, I think it's back to, you know, to my original comment. You know, real leaders lead, okay?
Okay.
They figure it out. Now, I'm going to just throw a name out, you know, because this gentleman is not working there anymore, but he used to be the director of Hennepin County Children and Family Services, okay?
Okay.
He was, you know, raised in a military situation. His father was high up ranking military, and he was a PhD doctor,
mm-hmm.
and he ended up being director of the whole thing. I'm talking about foster care, everything, okay? Dr.
Mm-hmm.
David Sanders, okay?
Yes, sir. I knew that was the name you were going to throw out. Go right ahead.
I'm telling you, he did a fantastic job. You didn't hear any of this stuff.
Mm-mm.
You would see him, you know, cable had just started to come in then, and you'd see him
right.
going up against the county board and telling what we need, what the county needed, what they needed to do that job to keep these kids and families safe.
Mm-hmm.
And he got everything he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but see, he got recruited to run, which was the most difficult child protection job in the country, Los Angeles County.
California, yes, sir.
Los Angeles County.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he turned that around.
Mm-hmm.
And he did so well there, they brought him in as an executive at this place called the Casey Foundation. And I'm sure, Ron, you know.
Oh, yes. Go right ahead. Mm-hmm. Top of the line. Yes.
Top of the line.
Mm-hmm.
They brought him in as a vice president. Right away, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he left the agency, and I heard this from the mouths of those that were his superiors, he said, we'll never have another David Sanders here. Nobody has not going to have that much power here.
Absolutely.
But what they were, to me, what they were saying is we'll never have another black man do that. Now,
probably use the N-word if I know some of the county board members at that time.
now, I'm going to be honest. I didn't hear him say that.
No, I'm just saying. But I know some of them. I knew the whole crowd that was there at that time, and you are absolutely correct, Tim.
But in their
that was kind of discussion. We'll never allow.
We'll never allow
that kind of power to be ceded to a,
you know,
to an African American. But go ahead.
Instead of recruiting his replacement, or hiring him to help his, you know, his replacement, they split the whole thing up where they have, 10, 12 managers doing what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As
the chief administrator, absolutely.
As the chief administrator. I mean, he was over everything.
Didn't we also lose an outstanding medical hospital administrator who departed from here and, in fact, still is the head of the Truman Medical Center, one of the largest in the country in Kansas City, Missouri. Didn't we have that kind of misfortune also?
Yes, we did. but you know, my point in all of that is, see, the people are there. The ways
yes,
and
sir.
The means to do these things are available,
mm-hmm.
see, if they really want it to be done. It can be done. You know, you can put together a team. You can put together the people that can get it done.
Okay.
There's a lot of expertise.
Okay.
But
okay.
I see this thing as being just a huge setup. You know, and the older I get, for some reason, the clearer I see it.
Okay. Gotcha. I think a lot of others do. And there's still some great minds out there. The caller, Mr. Smith, made an interesting challenge to everyone when he talked in terms of trying to reach out to these young people. And I think that there are many of us that would do that. But the only problem is that the people that say that they are now leading them must, in fact, be respectful and make the request that there be this kind of fellowship and coming together and et cetera. Would you not agree, Mr. Allen? my associate is away talking on the phone. I can tell when he.
Well, see, the thing is, you know, we get these quasi people. See, a lot of people aspire to leadership roles for a number of reasons. You know, monetary, you know, they like the euphoria of being the big and whatever. But, see, everybody wants to sit in the king's chair, but that doesn't make you a king, see?
Absolutely.
Just
and many,
in the chair
and many who
do
have
it.
Done that have lost their head in the course of history.
Right,
Em, I want to ask you this question, though, because we've been Give me your reflections over the next couple of minutes of the whole South Carolina, et cetera. And because of your knowledge of the human disposition and et cetera, do you really think that Mr. Root acted alone as a lone wolf in a very well-executed assassination?
Boy, a couple things I have thoughts on that. One is that that minister, that young minister, boy, he was an up-and-coming young man, okay?
Yes, he was.
And I believe he was targeted.
Earlier in this program. Mm-hmm.
I believe that young man was targeted. I mean, this guy goes in there and sits and prays and commiserates with them and sits right next to the pastor so he knew exactly who he was looking for,
mm-hmm.
you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just an assassination. I mean, and there's some people behind him, I believe. But I mean, he's kind of like one of these, you know, they knew he was a dummy, a fall kind of guy, that they could rouse him up, and get
fire
him to do
up.
Something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
now,
I
by
mean,
the way,
could,
and we at the top of this program, we received a call from outstate who challenged us with regards to how we viewed the possibility of what you just said, and we did go into a long reflection. In fact, we had that caller on the air with us for about 25 minutes.
Wow, sorry I missed that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can always, you know, you're always re-engaged by going on demand. You may want to listen because the caller challenged us and he invoked some reflections that caused us to go into our deep, investigative wardrobe and et cetera. And one of the things Mr. Allen and I have been talking about is the absence, particularly amongst the white commentators and the white networks and et cetera, to even discuss the possibility of a conspiracy. And that clearly there was someone behind this individual other than a two-time dropout of the ninth grade. Mr. Allen and I have talked oftentimes about how you bust people behind plagiarism, and I know that you, sir, in your life experiences is aware of that. You know, turned down a lot of applications, people that it was quite clear they were plagiarizing. What happened was the Poverty Law Center in Birmingham busted him clean 3 days ago. They have a computer system, gentlemen, at their headquarters, hope they don't get bombed, in which they have developed a program which is able to immediately research, and Mr. Allen certainly is a computer person. They are able to immediately locate, and they found the manifesto is actually the property of one of the most dangerous but yet sophisticated white hate group, supremacist group in the United States. And they were actually the persons that were also behind him. And so your reflection just a couple minutes ago about he truly is what you call a candidate from the Manchurian candidate, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yes, they got his mind right. And because mm-hmm. here's what is
Wound
so tragic about this. When he was in the 8th and 7th grade, he had colored friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
well,
in
that's
fact,
kind of
on
not
his website, gentlemen,
in the
and
South.
We appreciate it, Em, as we let you go. On his website, 12 of his 71 friends were African Americans.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he was raised in the South. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to South. I've been to those cities down there. Well, I used to work for a corporation.
I play golf all the time down in a place called.
I've been down there.
Sumner. North South Carolina, just south of Columbia. Man, I know the country well down there.
I went down there and I saw all these signs of Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee, these statues,
Boston,
all of these things
down there. Yeah.
All these flags, which another thing that flag should be eradicated. They lost, okay? Lives were lost to unite this Union. That's why that war was fought, okay? and that's over with. And they should ban that thing like a swastika. They should throw that, burn that thing, and not allow that thing around because it's over with.
Absolutely.
It was over with, so
and
that
it is
this should be a united country. That's right. And that's a symbol of continued division, because they feel, these fools down there feel that it's not over, that they can, cause somehow they can rise up and they can still do this.
Remember the old movies, starting with Birth of a Nation and Gone with the Wind, which were 30 years apart, but the same thing. The South will rise again.
Appreciate it.
Look forward to hear from you again next week.
Until next time.
All right. Take care, sir. All right. Mr. Allen, I guess we're in the last 4 to 5 minutes. Observations, what do you think is going to be happening? Those are some interesting exchanges between Mr. Nelson and Anonymous.
Yeah.
And Bogart Smith's observations were rather interesting. There's always a response, but sometimes you let a person talk and give their expressions and et cetera. Now, I have no knowledge of at any point in time that, because I'm very much aware of your conversations with the current president of the NAACP, I don't know that you did anything, Mr. Allen, but offer to be involved, offer your expertise, your knowledge, and your background. So I'm kind of puzzled on how we get around the treachery of folks who pretend that they want to do something, but unfortunately the experience would indicate something opposite. And then when we start talking about the experience, then we become bad guys. So I'm going to talk to Marvin privately and, you know, just remind him of some of the things that happened in this community over the last 50 years. And, you know, how do we work our way around that? Because I have to say my colleague, Mr. Allen, definitely reached out to the current leadership of the NAACP. In fact, there was a conversation which was overheard, though not by Mr. Allen, but by somebody that's been on this program, in which a person, you know, who certainly was looked upon as honest and reasonable and a friend of Mr. Allen, actually was having a discussion of the last NAACP meeting about calling the police on Mr. Allen, which seems to be the modus operandi.
Well, this is what it is, Mr. Edwards. The elder of the community told me, he said, when you offer your expertise or your help to some of these people and they reject you, like they rejected, you know, myself, they become inconsequential Negroes. Because, they don't understand the level of sophistication that you have and what you do. And if they don't understand it, they become fearful of it. Which meaning that, you know, you'd get more play, you know. And then what Frederick Douglass said, knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. Okay? Do I want to be a yes man, or do I want to be an effective follower with an independent thinking?
Yeah.
You know, and so they don't want that independent thought process in there at all. And I'm not no cheerleader for any political party, period.
Let me just say on that particular note, one of the great minds that I am aware, and he is still in the legislature there in Nebraska, is the legendary Ernie Chambers out of Omaha, Nebraska, and the only African-American ever to sit in the Nebraska legislature. By the way, Nebraska is one of the only states in the United States that has a single legislative house, the Unihouse, as they call it. And, you know, I heard Ernie say that, man, to some of us young cats, man, way back, down in 1959, 1960, before he got elected into political office. But he was a great mind, continues to be a great mind. And I swear to God, that's some of the reflections that I've heard from people that I certainly respect. So, well, Mr. Allen, I think this has been an outstanding program. We hope that our listeners join us again next Wednesday, and God forbid that we are faced with what we were faced with last week as we were leaving the air having no idea. But
yeah,
once again, our prayers
to the victims,
the loved ones.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, we have another caller chime in. We're going to try to squeeze him in there real quick.
Go right in.
Call you live on the air. We have less than 30 seconds.
Oh, hey, it's Tony. It's been a really great, spirited show, but I was just wondering a couple of things. One is, didn't that the shooter, which was a horrific event, by the way, but didn't he have friends that he was just with that were, you know, by, you know, he had like a multiracial group of friends, and that they said on TV that he was actually that he told them what his plans were, and that to me sounds kind of strange that he did.
Yeah,
and then
just say quickly, it wasn't his multiracial friends, but it was one of his friends who is fully a Caucasian, who actually helped turn him in, and who actually at one point had taken the gun away from him, but for whatever reason decided to give it back to him. His multiracial friends were people he had before he was 14, 15 years old and dropped out of school. He didn't have any racial, he didn't have any multiracial friends at the time that he committed this savage act a week ago tonight. Hope that answers your question.
The other thing that I was wanted to ask you was, there was a black military guy with the Confederate flag that's floating around on Twitter. So they're from that time of the war, I guess there was black Confederate.
There was a small detachment during that time. They had no choice, either serve or be killed. And so that was one of the ways to get away from the lash on the plantation. There was a small company, quote-unquote, of black Confederate soldiers, if you will. Particularly, actually, the group came out of South Carolina, of all places. That is correct. And the choice was either be a soldier and die for the Confederacy or die in the cotton fields of South Carolina.
Well,
no,
okay.
That's all. Yeah,
appreciate that.
All
right.
Take
care.
That's all we have for tonight. But we'll get back. And thank you for calling. You listen to the Round and Down Show. We'll be back next Wednesday. Thank you.